Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror. Greetings, viewers and listeners. Meat Hook Jim here at the Wrestle Horror Podcast, along with my co-host Donnie Hoover.
Hey, everybody. What's going on?
And, of course, we're always joined by, or at least most of the time, by Mr. John Orlando.
How's it going, folks? Hope everybody's doing well out there.
And on this episode, we've got a guest who does a little managerial work in the business. We're talking about Ripper Blackheart. Ripper, how are you?
I'm good, Meat Hook. How about you?
I'm doing great, doing great. Welcome to the show. We've been trying to get you on here for a while.
Yeah, like we were discussing earlier, technology hates me. I'm a caveman when it comes to this stuff. That's why I got married. I got married to a smart girl so she could figure all that stuff out.
So what you do is you use your cane to beat the technology when you get home. Is that it?
Yeah, apparently that doesn't work. So I've been told.
So, let's talk about Ripper Blackheart, the manager. I know I've seen you working in New Ohio Wrestling as well as FGW every Friday night. How's that working for you? I mean, you just you're managing Logan right now in FGW, and Logan just can't seem to get a win over Harley Fairfax. What's up with that?
Yeah, Logan is my son. He took the last name Blackheart. And we've been in a feud with, at least I have, with Darkness Worldwide for probably about a year or so now. And the main problem seems to be that Harley Fairfax always has someone intervening on her behalf, whether she wants it or not, in these matches. So this Friday night, it's Logan Blackheart, it's Harley Fairfax, and we're all banned from ringside. I can't even be there. David Barton Spector can't be there. No one from Darkness Worldwide can be there. And we'll see. We'll finally see if she's as bad as she says she is. And if the fact that Logan, as Space Invader, was the longest reigning and first ever FGW champion was a fluke or not.
Yes, he was. I was getting ready to bring up the former Space Invader, who's taken a bit of a a little darker edge now that he's Logan Blackheart.
Well, yeah, you take the name Blackheart, it's a given.
But he's definitely showing some more attitude. He's not the – I mean, he's still a fan favorite. He's a face. But you kind of wonder because he scowls a lot more and – He shows some of the black heart in him.
Yeah. The whole Space Invader thing came about. Mainly the first match he was in, he was still underage to participate. So they threw him under, they said, if you got a hood, put a hood on. The only one he had was one of mine, was a Gene Simmons made mask. And it was way too big on him. And he's in this battle royal and there's like, Ed Gonzalez is in this battle royal, so that should tell you something, that how much he got messed with. And when he got to the back, I can't remember Tyler's last name, but he used to ref a lot for Cody down in Dayton, Cincinnati area. He looked at Logan and said, that's not your mask, is it? And he's like, no. So he's like, he threw him a mask and threw him like trunks and some tights and said, here, you can have this. I'll never use them. So he kind of showed me, I'm like, well, you need to come up with a gimmick for that then. Okay, I will. A couple of days later, come up, gimmick. No, I will. You know, and then it gets to the point where they're going to let him start wrestling. You got a gimmick? Yeah, I'm going to be Space Invader. Okay. It took off from there, and then, like, kids, like, took to him instantly, Space Invader. And he just played off that, and to the point where, yeah, it got to the point where we were still far CWAI back then, which was a Christian wrestling organization. And FGW kind of came out of his ashes. The Future Great Championship was created as like a mid-card title for CWAI from the main sponsor, which was Brian Levick, who owns Future Great Comics. He had the original belt made and brought it. So we show up. It's an outdoor show or Superhero Saturday thing they're doing in Hamilton. And we get there, and Cody's like, hey, we're doing a tournament for this belt today. And he's like, all the winners are going to go to this match, and it's going to be like a Survivor Series type match, whatever. And then the winner gets the belt, and Hooks was there, and he was like, that's cool. What are we putting it on? He's like, Space Invader. And Logan's jaw dropped.
I bet.
But, yeah, we had another show go to later that day, and, you know, even as a kid, he was afraid of looking like a mark, which right. I'm like, you're allowed to. You're a kid, and but he was always like, so, you know, he wasn't like looking gaga over the moon and all that stuff in the back and all that. So we're driving to the other show, and I look over, and I'm like, how cool is it to win your first title? He looked over me and goes, it's pretty cool. So, you know, he did this for a while. The plan was always to get out of the mask, though. He just didn't know how he wanted to do it. Brandon Day comes, and the opportunity arises. He exposed who he was and how he was my son and all that. And, like, him taking the Blackheart name was also a total surprise to me. I didn't know it until he actually said it in the ring, because he had wrestled at OCW under the same name he wrestled under, which was Logan Lynn.
Right.
He tagged with Kid Bullet. They were the son of a guns. So I figured that's what he was going to do. He was going to be Logan Lynn. And then he said, Logan Blackheart. I looked at Cody and said, I didn't approve this. And Cody's like, that's what he said and he was going to do. And I said, I'm just being a dick, Cody. I don't care. But yeah, so yeah, he's that's why we chose the song he comes out to is Danzig's Mother. We wanted to make it like so that it's kind of symbolic.
Right.
Why he chose that, because he was the slapping hands with all the crowd and telling kids to listen to their mom and that guy. Now he's not, and he wants everybody to know that, you know, yeah, you could cheer for me, but I'm not that white hat good guy clean cut baby face anymore.
Okay. Did you have any reservations about Logan wrestling? Because I know from talking with other wrestlers, like they would say, I don't know if I'd let my kid do it. You know, did you have any reservations?
Yeah, but I was kind of not given a choice. He had some pretty dark times, Logan did. And so I always told him, go to college, trade school, whatever, something.
Mm-hmm.
And then after, if you want to go do it, I said, but you got to get a degree. You got to get something that I just didn't want him doing what I do for a shoot job. I work in a factory. I don't want my kids doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the deal. And I told him, you know, I know almost every trainer in 3 states. And if I reached out and told them, they probably wouldn't touch you. But he was having some problems. A psychiatrist and a therapist are both telling my wife the one constant thing he keeps bringing up is wrestling. Is this a possibility for you? So then she tells me, and I'm like, God. So then I text Cody Hawk. I was like, hey, Cody, is there any room in your next class? My kid's only, he's going on 16. By the time class starts, he should be about 16. If there's something I need to, sign or whatever, I would do that. And he was like, yeah, dude, bring him down. This is the address. This is the first day of the class and all that. And that's what I did. And I'm glad I did, because as God is my witness, pro wrestling is what saved Logan's life. That's why he's here now. That's why he's excelling in all the things he's doing outside of wrestling, I believe. So, like I said, very shut off for a while. He's much more outgoing than he ever was in school. So yeah, it wasn't my main plan, but like I said, situations that happen. I was desperate, and so we went that route, and I'm glad I did. I tell Cody all the time that he saved Logan's life. So
that's it's really good to hear, and the fact that you know the man upstairs has a plan, and for Logan, wrestling was that plan. It sounds like.
Oh, and I was telling Don, he is so much smarter at this than I am. The behind the scenes stuff, he really gets. And Cody even said when he was training that it wouldn't surprise him at all that if Logan wanted to, he could have a job in creative at any promotion he wanted.
Hmm. Okay.
That's cool.
Even better.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you're really proud of him, especially shocked when he took the Black Art name.
Oh yeah, like I said, I had no idea that was happening until it happened.
Well, let's go ahead, Donnie.
I was just gonna say, speaking of the Black Art name, let's get a little background on you, Ripper Blackheart and Corey Grant, because I know I started in wrestling in '97 is when I first got into it for the first round, and you've been around just as long, if not longer than me. I'm not sure when you got started.
Well, see, everybody thinks that. It's just because I am old. But actually, it was spring of 2003.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I went to a war show, the first ever war show, which is literally pretty much in my backyard from where I live. When they ran a UAW hall, I could get there roughly 20, 25 minutes from my house. And it was shortly after WCW folded, and I was a WCW guy and NWA guy before that. I talked to John about that on his podcast a little bit.
Yeah.
We were looking, me and my friends were looking for something else other than WWE. I mean, some of them just like wrestling, period, but they're me and a couple other guys just, we weren't the flag bearer WWE fans. And then I heard a radio commercial for War Wrestling in Lima. So I got a hold of some friends and we made a night of it. The wives came because we took them out to eat earlier and we went to their first ever show. Blown away because it was probably the first independent show that I'd been to live. And I'd seen independent wrestling on TV, and sometimes TV doesn't do it justice just because their production just isn't at the level of something like a WWE or AEW now, for example, or even Ring of Honor or Impact. But had a program and then had an email and contact device, a contact information in it, and I contacted Big Tom. At the time, I was self-publishing my own comic book, so I had a bunch of different artists, people I knew from working comic conventions. And between me and my brother, we knew like 12 different bands in the area. So I got a hold of him and said if he needed like some artwork or maybe some original music, I could hook him up. And I simply got this message, we need to talk, here's my number. So I called a number, and then first time ever talking to Big Tom, I'm on the phone for 3 hours.
What?
Three hours.
Tom, yeah. Long-winded?
Yeah.
The hell you say?
He doesn't, yeah, but I could see that with somebody. He doesn't know me at all. I could be setting him up to skin him and wear his skin for Halloween costume. That's the horror part. I want to get some of that in there.
There you go.
But yeah, so I met with him shortly after. I think it was like on the second or third show. I started hanging flyers, setting up, tearing down. And then, yeah, it had to be like the second show. The third show, his business partners like didn't pay their share of what they were supposed to pay for the show, kind of left him high and dry and told him they were done. So I got three of my other friends, and we came in, and we pretty much took their spot. So for like 2-3 years, we were part owners of War with Tom. And within that year, Tom decided to put me out front because I'd already I was working a camera, doing all the other stuff, working gimmick tables, whatever. But he'd heard me do this character. When I got bored, be sitting in the back watching, if I was in the back watching with him on the monitor, do this character commentating. And he's like, I'm going to start putting you out there as being like a heel interviewer. And that's how I got started. I had the Ripper's ring. It was kind of like Piper's Pit, only not good. And I never, ever got to finish one. Somebody always came in and there was a confrontation between somebody. But then it got to the point where Steve Stone, which I credit him, I would still just be a guy interviewing people and commentating people if Steve Stone didn't say, how about you being a jerk to me, I clothesline you. And I'm like, sure, but I am not trained. I am not trained at all. I lucked into this like you would not believe how I lucked into this. But he was like, oh, stop being a prima donna and blah, 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 you know. I mean, he used some more colorful language than that. And I went to Tom, and Tom's like, yeah, just showed me how to take a backbone. He clotheslined me. From then on out, I was bringing in guys to take out Steve Stone and kept putting a bounty on him. And next thing you know, I'm managing a war, which that's the only place I worked for years. And then Dusty Dillinger started taking me places with him. And Cody Hawk invited me to come down to places he was running. And now I'm more busy now than I should be at the tail end of doing this stuff. And I'm more busy now than I ever been doing it ever. I mean, I worked for Donnie, New Ohio. I worked for Cody, FGW. I worked for War. I worked for OCW. And at my age, that's quite a lot. But that's how I got started. And in the whole managing thing, and I've managed a lot of great guys. I'm very fortunate to be doing what I'm doing, even at this very small level.
You know, that's one thing I always wanted to do, and I've told Donnie this numerous times. I've always wanted to be a manager. You mentioned WCW and the NWA. That's what I grew up on. I was raised in the South. So, you know, it was WCW, NWA, Georgia Championship Wrestling, Florida Championship Wrestling. So I applaud you for that. I've never been a big WWE guy. You know, I watch the product. I'll watch something else if I have the opportunity. But I've always wanted to be a manager. It's just, I think it would just be fun.
It's a whole lot funner when you're the bad guy.
And that's what I'm saying. The bad guy manager, you know, I want to be a heel manager. And I've threatened Donnie. I bought myself a mask. It looks like the assassin's mask, but it's red.
So a real quick question, Corey, what is probably the few skills you have to be a manager? Because I think that there's that misconception. Anyone can do it.
Yeah. I never thought of that.
No, Jim. That's not what I meant. I just meant that I think in the general public. That
there's a lot of people that think anybody can do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Same way, you know, and it's same way, you know, with commentating.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think, well, anybody should be able to comment. Even I thought that at one point because it came pretty easy to me doing color. But if I ever – I've had to do a couple times play-by-play, and oh, my God. Oh, I'd rather swallow a bullet than have to do play-by-play. It is so difficult to do play-by-play and be entertaining and not make the match seem boring or take away from the match.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also something as a manager, you got to realize it's not about you at all. Right. As a manager, you are a tool either to get a storyline over, a wrestler over, a move over something. You are just one more thing that they can use to get their match over, their storyline over. Mm-hmm. You can't have an ego at all being a manager. Because, like I said, you are a tool. That is it.
I'm sure that's not the first time you've been called a tool.
No. And you got to know how to talk, and you got to know how to know what you're going to say before you say it. Mm-hmm. Also, here's a good example. I love Jim Cornette.
Okay.
But he is not evolving with the times.
No.
And if he doesn't evolve with the times, there's not going to be a spot for him in professional wrestling anymore. And I have felt, even I have evolved since the time I've started. I've made some very questionable remarks on commentating that if I was doing it now, I wouldn't say it, just because I know the time has changed, the climate has changed. And that's also as a wrestler, or as a wrestler and as a manager, or any talent that's out in front of the crowd, you also have to know where it's not the 90s anymore, guys. I'm sorry. It's not. The Attitude Era was cool. ECW was cool, but you're never going to get that now, until unless there's a big change in the climate on how stuff is perceived in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a manager, plus you got to be able to remember, hey, you got to remember spots just like a wrestler does. There's a certain spot they want you to come in. They want you to do this. Mm-hmm. You got to be paying attention. You can't get distracted by the guy calling you 20 million things behind you, or sometimes even having stuff thrown at you. You got to be paying attention to what's going on in the match. But you also, if you're out there, you should interact with the crowd a little bit. That's why they're there. They want to have some kind of interaction with you. And if they can't interact with the wrestler, at least I'm there. I can provide something for them. So, yeah, it looks easy, but there's a lot more to it than a lot of people think. Cutting a good promo, which some people say mediocre promos I do is most people find good enough. But you got to know how to talk. You got to know the audience you're in front of.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, when I told people Ripper Blackheart was part of a Christian wrestling organization, everybody was like, what?
You know, and I think that actually, to be honest with you, I think that also is something that workers should know, is that I, and this is kind of going away from our original topic, but I think you got to know your fans, because I think that, you know, for an example, you know, when Jeff ran OCW, we were that kind of, that our crowd was that kind of WWF type of crowd. They didn't really dig guys that would come in and work that Ring of Honor strong style. They would sit on their hands.
Oh yeah.
That's not what they wanted, you know? So I think
they wanted a story. They wanted
characters and stories, and they didn't want the technical prowess of some guys coming in there and just being unbelievably talented.
Oh, yeah. I tell guys all the time, like, I've spent a lot of time when Logan was training with, like, two or three different classes Cody had. And, you know, sometimes Cody would have me work with them on promos and stuff like that, and they would ask me questions, and I'm always like, and Big Tom says this all the time too, but everybody's shown the moves. Everybody's taught the moves. Why do I give a shit about you? What is it about you that's going to make me cheer you, going to make me hate you? And it's the gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to have a good gimmick, and it's got to be something that the fans believe. So you've got to be able to pull it off. It's got to be – I mean, if you're – let's just take, for example, what's the little short guy in AEW?
Marco Stunt.
Okay. He's not going to pull off a Hulk Hogan gimmick. It's just too unbelievable. But Rey Mysterio from the 1990s, that type of thing, yeah, he could pull that off perfectly.
Right.
That's just you. That's too. You got to that. And you guys know Little Tom Dexter Dementia.
Yeah.
He's always said that me and Dusty Dillinger aren't really gimmicks. We're just, that's our personality turned all the way up, which for the most part is. And that's why I tell a lot of them too. If you're going to pick a gimmick that you think you can get over right away, it's got to have a little bit of you in you. Now, there's some guys who take gimmicks that are there. It's the complete opposite of how they really are, and they pull it off great. But if you're going to start off, I always say it should have just a little bit of you in it. And that's part of the thing with Logan, with the Space Invader thing. He's a big video game geek. So that I think that's kind of what drew him to that, and he built off of that. But, yeah, whatever we talked about managing, and we got all the way over here.
way over here.
It's all informative, and that's what we want. That's what we want. That's why we're doing this, you know. Even if we go off on a tangent, it's information that's being provided.
So. Yeah, I tell them all the time. Most guys, most promoters I know that book, they'll book a gimmick over a guy who can do a Canadian destroyer off the top rope.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's the gimmick that makes people care.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. You know, you mentioned Dexter Dementia, Little Tom. You two worked a lot of matches against one another and together. Do you have any cool Little Tom stories?
There's nothing cool about Little Tom to begin with. Yeah, I feuded with Delivery Inc. for quite some time, and he was part of that. But then when Tom got sick and had to step away, and Dusty came in and started GWA, he decided to put Little Tom when we came up with the Mr. Old School character.
Mm-hmm.
And that was supposed to be a mask character.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Originally, he was supposed to wear a mask. And the reason he was going to wear a mask, because I was going to announce, because if women just gaze upon his face, they become pregnant. I got the mask, and it didn't really work. So instead, he decided to grow a mullet. And we went that route with it. But the best story I have, Lil Tom, is the story that he told me about the crappiest guy you ever wrestled. And I want to say, was it Dr. Love out of Indiana? And Dr. Love, he chewed skull, but he would keep it in.
And he
would swallow. Yeah, he would swallow. Which would give him the shits. And they're in the middle of a match, and he slams Tom. I think that's how it goes. And he goes down there and says, "We got to take it home." And Little Tom's finished at the time. That guy's crotch in the area is in his face. So he goes ahead, and they take it home, whatever. And then Little Tom goes, "Now, you want to hear the messed up part?" I'm like, the guy crapping himself during the match isn't the messed up part. Because we get in the back, and he says, "Usually when that happens." I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, apparently that was like the fourth or fifth time he crapped himself in a match. Yeah. But he's done stuff to me too. He did that top rope elbow for a finisher for a while, and it looked like a small car coming down on you.
Yes, yes.
Well, he did that to me at the Allen County Fair, and then I'm supposed to be, you know, I'm all knocked out, right? Then he starts unbuttoning my shirt, and I know no good can come of this. And he whispers in my ear, "You can't do nothing because you're supposed to be knocked out." And takes my chest hair and goes like this, and yank!
Ow!
Yeah.
Just thinking about that hurts.
Yeah.
Did you have words for him when you got back to the tent?
Dude, he smacked me one time, too, at a other fair before the show. Snuck on bum and gave me just a big old bitch slap and took off, right? So during the match, I'm managing Chris Hall. It's him and Chris Hall. During the match, it gets to the point where I interfere, and I gave him his receipt. And neither one of us ever ran so fast in our lives because we're two very fat guys. He's trying like hell to catch me, and I'm trying like hell for him not to catch me.
Here, I'll ask my other question here real quick that I have on my paper here. Who's the greatest manager of all time?
In my mind, there's a tie.
Okay.
And that is between Bobby Heaton and Paul Ellering. And I say this, and a lot of people, Paul Ellering. Not Paul Ellering. I messed that up. Not Paul Ellering. Paul Heyman. And the reason I say Paul Heyman along with him, because they both do the same thing. They cut the promo for their guy. They are the ones that made you want to go to the arena and see their guy either kill somebody or get killed. Think about, you know, the Heaton family. How many? John Studd didn't really cut a lot of promos. Bundy didn't cut a lot of promos. Even Andre, you know, Andre didn't cut a lot of promos. It was Heaton cutting them promos and making them fans feel one way or another. Now, fast forward, Brock Lesnar. Mm-hmm. The way you feel about Brock Lesnar is usually interpreted by, however, Paul Heyman cuts a promo for Paul Heyman upcoming match. He's the one. I mean, yeah, it's cool to see Brock Lesnar. He's a big guy. He's very good at what he does. But it's Paul Heyman that invokes the emotions in the fans when it comes to Brock Lesnar.
Absolutely.
For a minute, I thought you were going to say Paul Jones, and I was going to boo you.
The Paul Jones army. If there was anything worse than the judging of doom, it's the Paul Jones army.
Yeah.
It was like the NWA was like, we don't know what to do with these guys.
Yeah.
Put him with Paul Jones.
Put him with Paul Jones, and they could feud with Jimmy Valiant for 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, man. Paul Jones was the worst.
And I don't know how he lucked out to have Rude and Manny Fernandez win the tag titles while he was managing. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah.
But that was, other than that, he was like Pez Watley when he changed his name to Skaska and
the Barbarian.
The Barbarian was, what's some of the other, just
Tejo Khan.
Tejo Khan and the Masked Russians, which you knew weren't, they didn't even try like they tried with Crusher Khrushchev to say, he's got Russian descent. Descendants. He's related to the Kolos. He's like a third cousin twice removed. They didn't even try. They just slapped two masks on these guys, and they're like, these guys are Russians. They were Paul Jones.
So I heard a story that, because I remember even as a kid, like I was like, this isn't right. Do you remember when Paul Jones would have the khaki suit and he had the Hitler mustache?
Yes.
Apparently he had a regular mustache and he thought he would just mess with the Crockett's and just shave a little bit each day down until finally, I don't remember which one goes, why do you have a Hitler mustache? And he just to do it, just to see how long it would take them to notice.
Well, good for him.
A little bit.
That's what they get. That's what they get for giving him all them guys they didn't know what to do with. What else is he supposed to do? It's not like they're giving him contenders. I mean, God bless every one of them. I think he had Kamala for a while too.
Had Abdullah the Butcher.
And Abdullah, but if you were managed by Paul Jones, they weren't giving you a belt. I'll tell you that. But he made lemonade out of lemons, you know. He did his job once again. A lot of them guys he had didn't cut promos. He cut the promos.
Mm-hmm.
Hated them guys because Paul Jones made you hate them guys.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, I remember there's a couple of managers now that we're talking about, some old managers. Lord Alfred Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
And Sir Oliver Humperdinck.
I love Humperdinck.
He was great.
Especially towards the end when he was coming out with his shirt unbuttoned.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love that. I was like, oh, there's a guy that says, suck it, I don't care.
and then WCW made, what, Big Daddy Dink or something like that.
Yeah. He was with the Freebirds.
Yes.
That's when he came out with his shirt unbuttoned and stuff. Yeah. You know, Lou Albano did that stuff, but Humperdinck was a redhead on top of it. I'm like, right.
And just him as Bam Bam Bigelow's manager in the WWF never worked for me. Like, I don't know. I just didn't like
it. Yeah, but see, I think they were together in the AWA before that, and it did work there.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But was he a heel in the in?
Yeah, he was total heel in the AWA.
Yeah. Gotcha. Humperdinck.
I love that guy. I was like, oh.
I always enjoyed Heenan because, to me, I thought Heenan was the best manager because he was a worker, and so he understood things to a level that maybe some other managers didn't.
He had better – he was better at the little insults too, though.
True, yeah, right, yeah. He had the gab.
Nobody touches him on that level.
I agree. He would come with his insults out of nowhere, almost like an RKO out of nowhere. There's an insult from Heenan that you wouldn't expect.
My favorite's when they gave him his own show after Tuesday Night Titans.
Right.
It was like a talk show. And he had the Hoggettes, which
yes.
Three very large women in bathing suits. And one night he says, "Don't run to the kitchen. That's not bacon burning. The lights are just really hot here."
So what's
unfortunately, I don't think that show would be able to do today.
Oh no. Somebody be crying somewhere.
So what's your favorite city or town to work in as Ripper Blackheart?
Well, like I said, I have fun in pretty much every place I go. I hate it when people are like, "Hey, have fun." Why would I do this if it wasn't fun? Who would choose to do this if it was not fun for them? Like, Lima is pretty much like my second hometown. That's where I started. I can just go through the curtain. I don't have to say nothing. And instant heat. There's guys that get heat just because they show up with me. That's due to how I've been booked there. Mm-hmm. But Hamilton's becoming a close second. They've seen me, and it's the first promotion ever to have Ripper Blackheart as a babyface.
Yeah.
Which everybody said that'd never work. And when Cody Hawk suggested it to me, I said, "I'll do it," but everybody says that'll never work, and he said, "Challenge accepted." And it's gone off pretty good. If there's an easier crowd than Lima, Ohio, which is very easy, OCW being a close second to that, OCW crowds, Hamilton at FGW, I've heard them pop for a headlock.
Yep.
Like, it blew my mind that how the stuff that they pop for Rick Slick Rick saying 50-50 split the pot.
That's the way it's the way he says it.
And they pop for it.
They do. Like, they do.
Oh my God. But yeah, like I said, I pretty much have fun everywhere. Indiana's always tough. I ain't had to work there in a while, but the crowds in Indiana are a little like you got to force them to get into matches. You got to engage with them, or like you said, John, just sit on your hands. And it's not just because someone's doing a Ring of Honor; it's any match. They have to feel like they're part of the show in some way, and that's where like a guy like me come in. I come out and say some stuff to them. They say some stuff back to me. A couple people down. Get that guy. We don't like what he's saying to this guy. And then you start getting people. But Indiana, three or four places I worked there, they were all the same. It was very hard to get a crowd into a match over there unless you engaged them or the wrestlers, you know, acknowledged somebody in the crowd and said something. Mm-hmm. But like most places I worked, fairly easy. Like I said, the Canton, Akron area where OCW ran and runs still. Fans there are very easy. Lima's very easy. Hamilton's very easy. Even the different crowds Donnie gets here in the Columbus area, he gets I feel pretty much the same type of fans. They're type of fans that like characters more than they like a spot fest. So yeah, every place I work here in Ohio has been just, I have a blast, all of them. 4th of July, probably one of my favorite ones because it's done in my hometown. So a lot of people actually know me. And they're like, here's our opportunity. Just give him a bunch of crap. So, oh yeah. I've had my own mother chop me on a 4th of July show.
Yeah, where, talk about those 4th of July shows a little bit, because those are pretty special to you from what I'm understanding.
Okay, so 4th of July, I live in a little town called Bell Center. It's probably about as big as one or two blocks here in Columbus, city blocks in Columbus, if that. It's technically a village. It can't even be called a town. It doesn't have enough people to be called a town. It has to be called a village. But on the 4th of July, since we have such kick-ass fireworks, the town, like, gets flooded. Like, it's crazy. It's like going to an OSU Michigan game. That type of crowd comes into Bell Center for this. And when I was a kid, they had so much stuff going on. And through the years, it kind of declined just because they didn't have people volunteering to do the stuff anymore. And it got to a point where now people are starting to build it back up. So I went to them after I'd been doing this for a while. And Big Tom used to come over 4th of July all the time anyway, hang out with me. And I'm like, dude, we could run a show here. We could do a show here in the middle of all this. He's like, well, if you can make it happen. All right. So I got with a guy named Rick Moore, he's passed away now. We have a battle royal start off all the shows in honor of him. I told him, hey, you guys give me the space. I said, they don't use the bingo hall for anything. I like to use the bingo hall for a locker room, set up a ring in a parking lot. And sometime after you guys have like volleyball tournaments and all that, and before the fireworks, I'd like to put on a wrestling show. He's like, well, what do you want to charge for that? I said, I'll tell you what. You give me the space, I will go out and get the money to cover the wrestling show. I just need the space to operate in. And it won't cost the village anything. It's free entertainment for the village. So he's like, that should not be hard to get passed. So he got it passed by the council. I've been doing it ever since. It's the most stressful. I only do one show a year, and this is why. Because it is so stressful. So stressful. The whole getting the money part is the bad. Getting talent's no problem. Getting people help behind the scenes, no problem. Get the money from people. It's the same thing every year. There's certain ones I know I don't have to worry about. They're putting in every year. But I break it down into different packages. So everybody who wants to give, I go as low as $25 for your name on stuff. And then anything below that, we'll at least say your name over the microphone when we list stuff off once or twice. But I break it down by posters. We do two banners that get put up in the town like the month of or the month before. We do T-shirts. And I added it to the point where you could sponsor a match. Like you or your company alone, before the match starts, they say, following match is brought to you by so-and-so. And I different levels of it. And you get people. I drop the stuff off during the day. I don't expect an answer right then, but I'm like, my contact information's on there. Email, phone number, Facebook. Just let me know one way or another. And then just let me know what level you want. I don't need the money till like the week of the show. I just need to know so I can get this stuff done to put your name on whatever you want your name on. And it is like pulling teeth. I got to go to some people two or three times. What are we doing? Yes, no. Well, we're thinking about it. I need to get this stuff done. I mean, if you want posters should be out there at least a week or two before we're doing it. The banners I like to have out. Like I like to have banners out a good almost a month beforehand because I hang them up at the ballparks. a lot of traffic at the ballparks. And then, you know, the t-shirts, he's got to do those in advance. I can't wait till like the night before the show and have the t-shirt guy like, okay, I need.
Do you give them a deadline? Say, I need to know by such and such.
Oh, yeah, I do. And they still don't get back to me. I go back to them. Because I go back to the ones that say, either didn't give me an answer or said, yeah, definitely going to do something. I'll get back with you. And I almost always have to go back to everybody. There's a few, like I said, there's a few that do it every year that I know. They say, yeah, as soon as I show up, they'll say, yeah, I'm going to do it again. I'll do what I did last year, or I'm going to up it, or I need to lower it. But, yeah, it's I start this like at Easter.
Okay, I was going to say, do you start a year in advance, but you start around 3 or 4 months prior?
Yeah, but here's another thing. Everybody knows it's coming. we just did 10 years. This past July was 10 years of us doing this. So it's nothing new. When they see me coming, they should pretty much know what I want.
Just have the check ready for you and hand it to you. But with that being said, you do like a lot of – you wear like a lot of different hats. You do the manager. Like you said, you do some behind-the-scene work. You do some promoting. You go out and drum up sponsorships and creative. What do you think is your bread and butter? What do you enjoy doing the most out of all your hats that you wear?
What I enjoy doing the most is definitely coming up with – working the creative side. And that's thanks to – like I said, Big Tom, who brought me in on that side of stuff from day one, picking my brain for stuff like that. And then Cody Hawk does the same. And matter of fact, he has that. We do a YouTube show for FGW every Friday night. We put it on YouTube on Wednesdays.
Yep.
And after February, he's going to step back and have me do all the bookings and do the show, write the show, which the booking part, I think I got a handle on, but writing a TV show is a totally new venue for me. But I'm excited. I want to do it. Cody just said he needs to give his brain a rest and ask me if I would do it. And I was floored at first because, like I said, I did not come into wrestling in the traditional way at all, by any means whatsoever. I lucked into this. And the fact that he trusts me enough to give me the reins after February for a set amount of time, it just blows my mind. Like I said, and Cody's always – or Tom is always – me and him's always bounced ideas off of each other since day one. I love watching what we come up with. Unfold in front of a crowd and get the reaction that we are hoping for. They don't always, it doesn't always happen that way, but when it does, it is so great. I mean, it's like something, you feel like you created this. This is something that you did, and these people are acknowledging that you did what they want to see. Yeah, but as far as like putting a show together for like an event like 4th of July, yeah, if I could hand that off to somebody, I would.
Well, I got to say, I'm looking forward to seeing how you run the show at FGW, as I'm there practically every week. And as if you may know, my daughter Shelby is training with Cody right now.
Yes.
So, you know, I think it's a very entertaining show as it is. Every Friday night, you know, I mean, you can't beat it. $6 to $8 and you get great entertainment.
And if you like what you're seeing from NWA Power, it's pretty much like to say that when we got monitors in the back, and this before Power got put out there, I said, looking at this on TV, it looks like old studio wrestling.
Yep.
Just like Meat Hook said, that's what I grew up with. That's what I loved, old studio wrestling. And apparently everybody in Hamilton likes it too, because we get pretty decent crowds. I mean, there's times it's down, but you know, you're right around the corner from the local high school. You know, Christmas time's here, so people got to watch what they're spending and whatnot. But we get a lot of good nights in there. It surprises me sometimes even how many people cram into that little room.
Yeah. But it's fun. It is. And I remember the first time we went as a family to FGW, it was in August. And Chris, my wife, is sitting there with me. She goes, "There's Ripper Blackheart." I said, "Yeah, and he's a good guy here."
Yeah, that messes with a lot of people.
And she's like, "No, he's." She argued with me. "No, he's not." And I said, "Yes, he is."
I did commentating for a little bit while they were working out the bugs of it.
Right.
And Matt Taylor and Jimmy Shane come in for a show, and they were tagging up. And at this point, I'm face still. I'm on commentating. I'm face. And they both said, "It was really weird hearing you say good stuff about us during the match." I said, "How weird do you think it was for me having to say good stuff about you guys?"
But did you ever slip up during that and revert back to the normal where you throw a shot at them?
That match, no. But I've had every once in a while throw something in just because this is too funny. I got to say it anyway.
You know, I love the way you when you are working, the way you get on. Usually it's Joe Kopez is the brunt of your argument.
Joe is so old. He ref the first ever match between David and Goliath, and he let a foreign object get used then too. That's like the 12th time I used that joke. I love that. I use it every chance I get. Joe is both looks old and young at the same time, and it's ridiculous. Nobody knows how old Joe is because he looks exactly like he did when he broke into business, the exact same way.
Wow.
I swear to God, he bathes in the blood of virgins, I swear. But I'm thankful for Joe, too, because that's another guy. Logan started off as a ref, so that was another guy Logan got to learn a lot of. The ref stuff was from Joe and Jay Cortez in War, and Danny O'Brien came in for a little bit there when Logan was training, when he knew Logan was going to be a ref. So Logan was very fortunate to get to work with all them guys as referees too. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of people compliment him a lot on his refereeing skills and whatnot. A lot of people couldn't believe how long he'd been doing it. A couple people always on him, like Jake something, and Crosshair Kelly used to get on him all the time about sending stuff into the E. And he's like, I don't know if that's what I want to do. He's like, I'm still in school and all this other stuff. But to have guys like that, and like Jake something said, and he said, I'm not saying this just because he's your kid, but he's one of my favorite referees to have in a match. That's saying something, because he's pretty much – all over the place right now is Jake, and I'm just, like I said, I'm just happy he has a skill set that he can go to if he wants to, and it's something fun. It's a nice release. That's because that's what it is for me too. If I didn't have pro wrestling, you'd probably see me on the news, some road rage incident, or something. Some guy gets dragged out of his work by the authorities, and that's what I use it for too. That's why I tell everybody, I let the shoot life, let it all build up. And then when I'm at a show, there's somebody in a crowd that I'm going to unload it on, and he's going to be thankful for it.
It feels good though to release all that, doesn't it?
Oh yeah. Oh, there was a short time where, like I said, War wasn't running.
Right.
Tom got sick, and then Bob had a cancer scare. Dusty, sorry. So Dusty had to stop. And then there was nothing. The only place I was working was Lima.
Right.
So it was a good probably 3-4 months, maybe even longer. I didn't have wrestling. I mean, I went to other wrestling shows. I still went to OCW shows and hung out and helped out there and stuff like that. But Tom got a hold of me and said, "Hey, we're starting back up this date," all this other stuff. And I, "Oh, cool, blah, blah, blah." I go tell my wife, "Hey, war starting back up. This is when I'm going to do it, blah, blah, blah. And I kid you not. And my wife, she's not one. She don't like to cuss a lot. She likes to be very proper. But she looked at me and said, oh, thank God, because you're kind of a dick.
I've had that same experience before. Imagine that. Yeah, Terry didn't like my Shank Dorsey character, but she appreciated it because that was a way for me to release a lot of that anger and tension I had built up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As Ripper Blackheart, I've been stunned by my son, chopped by my mother, and my daughter hit me with one of those canes you get at the fair one time, too. During the show.
They give him the little payback, huh?
Yeah. So they may not like the Ripper character, but they appreciate why he's around.
Well, it's nice to get out of your own skin and just have some fun. I mean, I can completely relate to it because on the horror aspect side of things, I used to be a haunted house actor. And I would take out all of my frustrations from the work week on whoever was the next scare.
And I know some guys that are in wrestling or were in wrestling that do that too as a, what's his name up in Toledo, Malice's tag team partner, Phil Monahan.
Uh-huh.
He also does that. Okay. Comes time. And then Vinny from Jersey.
Yeah.
Manager back in the day, he does a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, he's at a lot of the haunt trade shows. He was at, you probably know him, Jim. What's his shoot name?
Vinnie Lanford.
Vinnie Lanford.
Sounds familiar. I've spent years in the haunt industry, and I'm still in it. I'm just taking a step back this year and letting somebody else run the business, and I'm just gonna concentrate on a few other things and you know, along with those is in the wrestling business as well. So you know, I'm still pretty new, just being a ring announcer for Donnie, but I enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, I've done that job too.
When I get into a little better shape, I want to learn how to take a few bumps so I can do some more.
Oh no, you don't.
I bet I'm older than you, Corey.
I got to talk in front of a class. My wife's a teacher, and one of her coworkers runs an after school group for some middle schoolers, and she's a huge wrestling fan. And so she asked me and Logan if we'd come in and talk about pro wrestling thing. And first thing I did before I said anything, made him watch the video, the five most horrific accidents in like pro wrestling. It was, you know, Sid Vicious jumping on the second rope and Owen Hart breaking Stone Cold's neck and all that. And made him watch that before I even told him anything. I said, and that's why, because there's a backyard thing happening in that area.
Sure. And
I was like, that's why you get trained right there. All them guys were trained, still got hurt. So imagine someone who isn't.
Right.
What's going to happen?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I've told this story on the show before, but I'll tell you. Shelby, again, my daughter, we were working. It was during Halloween season. We were out in Indiana, and we were working a haunted attraction. And as we were leaving, if you want the pathway that walks out from the actors area comes to a T crossing, and there's a big boulder on the right. Well, Shelby, being accident prone that she is, tripped over the boulder, went into a shoulder roll and stood right up. And it was because of her training with Cody that she was able to do that instead of getting hurt.
Oh yeah. Can't remember who was told me a story about Al Snow getting in a motorcycle accident. And when he was thrown from the motorcycle, he was, you know, in the air. And he told him first thing he thought of is, I better tuck my chin, put my hands out. And he come through it a little, not as bad as it would have been.
Right.
Maybe not. So, yeah, like I said, it's the training part. Like I said, I'll take a bump, but if I can get away without taking a bump, I'm all about that too.
Well, that's just what I mean, I just want to learn how to take a bump in case I would have to, is I guess where I would go with that. You know, that's all up to Donnie and everything. So we'll see what happens in the future.
Yeah, you never know.
I'm going to keep prodding him.
Yeah, I actually have a story like that too about the training, the land, and all that. We used to go camping a lot out of my buddy's place. Had a cabin. His family had cabin, and they had like mountains and stuff you ride around in. And I was riding on this four wheeler by myself. I was just out cruising around in the woods, and I come around this curve, and I got too close to the side of the mountain, and it kicked the left side of the four wheeler up, which completely threw me off the four-wheeler completely. The four-wheeler shot across the road, went down over the embankment, and I got thrown off the bike sideways, and somehow I landed perfectly flat on my back and just slid to like a slow stop. I got a couple scratches on my arms, but I had like a flannel shirt on, but I had like a couple scratches on my arms, and that was it. And I was like, how in the hell did I land perfectly flat like that?
But muscle memory, like, man. Muscle.
Yeah, just something you did. And it was after I'd walked away from wrestling for a little while too. And I said, yeah, that had to have been what it was. It just, I was so
muscle memory.
Yeah.
Memory.
Yep. So used to landing that way. And like I said, I don't know how I went from completely sideways to perfectly flat level land on a dirt and gravel road. It's like, but I pulled it off somehow.
Any last questions for Corey, guys?
We haven't touched on horror a lot. He's into, you do a lot of comic book stuff, and you do some writing and some creativity stuff. So are you into a lot of the
horror? I'm off work for a whole month, guys. I got all night.
So, I mean, how much into horror are you? Do you like a lot of stuff? Or?
I'm not like a huge – I don't go to like the horror conventions and all that because movies got to be good for me. I don't like it just because it's blood and guts. But there's a lot of stuff I like out there, like you name it. Like, I thought like when Scream came out, that was something different. It took the old slasher films, but it threw in the comedy, and it was a lot more well written than stuff I've seen before. And that reopened up the whole genre. I mean, you had remakes of Prom Night, and you had, you know, Halloween came back, and right. You had I Know What You Did Last Summer, you know, stuff like that. I like the original Halloween movies, you know, except for Halloween 3. I don't care how anybody tries to justify that.
You can't justify that movie. That was crap.
And I remember going to movie theater one time. I don't remember which Halloween it was. It was well after the third one. And it's me and my dad and my brother. Me and my brother are still in school. But we went. My mom was, you know, she's selling Avon or, you know, some crap where all women get together and they buy stuff that nobody needs. It was one of them things. So my dad got us out of the house, and we, one of the Halloween movies, and the guy's walking, and all of a sudden there's a bunch of birds come flying out. I remember my dad jumping and going, I'm going to jump, it better be him. Yeah, I like the Halloween movies. When I was younger, I liked the Friday the 13th movies. I tell you what, it's terrible, but I love Jason X. Him in space,
I thought was great.
And I love the comedy that they threw into it. And my favorite part where he did the hologram, and he picks up the sleeping bag with a girl in it, and he's just beating the hell out of her. I'm like, that's pretty cool. And I was a big fan of the original Friday 13th, or not Friday 13th, but the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. The original Nightmare on Elm Street actually gave my mother nightmares. We just had an incident when I was on our street, like there a murder happened, and we're just a very small town. and everybody knew everybody. And that movie came out shortly afterwards, and they went and saw it. And that's the first movie my mom can remember in forever that gave her nightmares. And I think it had something to do with that. But I was a big fan of the Friday the 13th or the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. I liked I'm trying to think some of the other ones out there at that time. We watched all the Evil Dead stuff when I was a kid. Even the ridiculous stuff, we knew it was stupid, but I like it if it's got a good story to it. There's even some stuff I want. Have you seen Wolf Cop?
No.
It's a terrible movie. The premise is great. It's a terrible movie. I sat through it because I liked what the premise was of it. But I feel like a lot of that stuff's what gets turned out now. And whenever – so I see an advertisement, it's like, this is the scariest movie of the year, rated PG-13. How scary is it? Yeah. Like a 13-year-old can handle it.
Right.
But to me, the scariest movie of all time still is The Exorcist. I still will not watch it with the lights off. There better be at least one light on in the damn room when I'm watching that. Even now that, you know, that special effects doesn't hold up mm-hmm. so much now to what they got now, but that scared the living crap out of me when I was a kid.
Oh, sure.
Another thing when I was a kid, any vampire movie. Like, my dad used to watch the old – we used to have Fritz the Night Owl. We used to get out of Columbus.
Yep.
And he'd show monster movies and other type of movies and stuff. But Chiller Theater always had – and it'd be like them Christopher Lee Dracula movies.
Right.
We'd stay up and watch that, and I'd go to bed, and I'd make sure that blanket was all the way up here like this. That's the only place he bites you. He only bites you on the neck. And all the people always had their neck like, yeah, like this, and the whole bear on one side, nothing but neck.
They should just paint a target on it. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
It was the tramp stamp of its day. I like different things. I like a lot of vampires. I really like vampires and werewolves a lot. And I've even written some stuff along that lines. Like I dabble in writing comic books and stuff. I haven't really put anything out forever in a day, but I did do a story, a one shot story, and I've got a guy working on it. It's slow going because he's an illustrator for OSU. So stuff gets in the way, but he has it. He did come up with a couple years ago called Doc Devil and the Monster Squad. And it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek one where he's a paranormal investigator, but he's also a professor like at the local community college. And his class, he teaches folklore and myth. And then the one shot, the campgrounds, has people disappearing, so they hire them, come in, and his best friend's Frankenstein, which is obviously Frankenstein. he has a Grim Reaper with him that he beat in some kind of contest. So now the Grim Reaper has to do whatever he says. He has a Nephilim with him. He's the new guy in the group, half angel, half human, and a witch who I didn't originally do this. The guy, Paul Hardman's the guy who was doing the artwork. He came up with this, and I liked it a lot. Where he's got her looking like half human, half like one of them shaved cats that you see. Yeah. And the thing is, she was, she's a self-taught witch. So she was dabbling with some spells and ended up doing that to herself. And now she can't undo it.
Whoops.
And they go and investigate to find out what it is. And I got that one done. And the one I've been working on and off is called The Mask of El Morte Rojo, which is both horror and wrestling related. He's a Mexican luchador who gets on the wrong side of the cartel. He's pretty much a tricky, more or less, with the drugs, taking the drugs across the border and stuff when he does all these shows. And when he finds out, he tries to set him up. Instead, he gets set up They murder him and his family, but the Aztec god of death brings him back to life and puts his mask back on him. And the thing is, as long as he's wearing his mask, which he was the Red Muerte Rojo, he was the Red Death.
Red Death, yeah.
He's invincible. He cannot die. He's stronger, he's faster, but if he takes it off and something was to happen to him, he can die. So it's kind of like the Crow-ish kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So he comes back from the dead, and his whole thing is he's getting back at everybody, but a whole bunch of weird stuff I got set up to happen to him. Like, he travels around with the skull of the Aztec god of death, and it talks to him, but nobody else hears it talking to him. And got that going on in the backstory. I'm going to have him abducted by aliens. I'm going to have him go against the Chupacabra. All kinds of just weird stuff's going to happen to him on his way to get back, go after the people who did all this to him. But I've got about two issues of that I wrote, and I'm like a visual guy, so I lose interest if I don't have somebody showing me, hey, I did this based off what you wrote. That's what, when we put out the first stuff that I did it's called Mr. Happy, Clown Prince of Pain. It was called ourselves Black Market Comics, and our catchphrase was the greatest comic book company that never existed. And it was, I had Mr. Happy, we had two stories in it, Mr. Happy and the Antisocial. Mr. Happy was pretty much if the Joker was a good guy kind of type thing. Had some Spawn elements to it. He was like a government. He worked for the government. He was an assassin, and they turned on him. They thought he was dead. He ended up being alive, but he had a total mental breakdown. Now he wears clown makeup, and he lives in a homeless community and keeps crossing paths with people he shouldn't cross paths with, and pretty violent. And then we did Antisocial, which was basically how I tell people is he's the Punisher on welfare. Like, the only reason he has access to guns and stuff because he inherited his dad's gun and ammo store. But the backstory of him is, like, he was part of, like, this elite special unit during Desert Storm. And when he came back, he's like a lot of soldiers are, he's broken and doesn't have the means to get the proper care that he needs. So to compensate, he goes out at night and does the things he's best at. So that's what we put out to begin with. We never really finished that stuff because I got involved in wrestling, and one of my partners in the comic book was also one of the partners. So the money we were sinking in comics started sinking into war wrestling, and our wives were like, you can't do both. So war wrestling was filling a void more than the comics were at the time. But yeah. I've started lots of stuff. Some I've finished, some I haven't. Like, I just started writing public domain character this week. I'm really interested in that stuff, the public domain, because it's open source is another, much like public domain, only open source is created with the sole intent that anybody can use the characters, where public domain were copyright characters at one time that just fell into public domain. Now they're open to anybody. But I came across those probably about a couple years before Dynamite started putting out all their stuff with the public domain characters, and I got really, really drew me in. I started looking up all this stuff about the characters and whatnot. So that's where comic book wise I could do. But I found a way to, like, kind of combine the comic book and horror stuff together a lot. Okay. Like I did with the wrestling comic that I told you about, and Doc Devil. But I've got original characters also that's what they're rooted in, like horror, like from the horror movies and other horror comics. Like, when I was a kid, though, that's all I read was superheroes, strictly superheroes. And if it wasn't superheroes, I didn't care. And I think the first, like, non-superhero comic that I actually sat down and read was when my brother was giving me issues of Preacher that he had gotten. He was
cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And I read that, and I'm like, that was totally messed up. There's no way it can get worse than what I just read. And every time I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is the most messed up thing I've ever read, ever. And I said, I've never been a big fan of, like, the zombie movies. But The Walking Dead, the different take they took on that started getting me interested in stuff like that as well, because it wasn't so much about the zombies as it was living in a world overtaken by zombies, which – so then I started giving other stuff a chance too, so.
Well, it's more about the human condition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one thing that drew me into it was – I mean, yeah, they had zombies, but it was more about what was going on with the humans than it was the zombies.
Mm-hmm.
But what was your – real quick, what was your favorite superhero, Corey?
Oh, Batman, hands down.
All right. There you go.
No arguments on that one.
Batman is the greatest superhero, and I'll argue with anybody. And I'll argue with anybody when they – when they talk about, I always say, yeah, he'll kick Superman's ass. And everybody, oh, Superman could kill him like that if he wanted. But he wouldn't.
Right.
Superman is the ultimate baby face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Superman would not stoop to that level, no matter what Zack Snyder wants you to believe. Right. Superman would not kill Batman. But Batman, if he felt was necessary, would totally kill Superman.
And he kicked the shit out of him in Dark Knight.
Yeah, and that's why Batman would win.
The comic book now I'm talking about.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's what I tell. That's why he would win. Right. It's not a question of superpowers. It's the question of what would you be willing to do to come out the victor. And Batman will do whatever he has to do that he feels is necessary to eliminate a threat. And if he felt Superman was a threat, he'd put Superman down.
Yes, he would. I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I know when what an idea I got for you is when you get back into your comics and get them going, you need to make a Ripper Blackheart cameo in each episode, each issue. Just like even if he's casually walking by in the background or something.
Funny you say that, because in I think it was the second issue we did at Black Market Presents, the artist drew me, him, and I don't remember if you remember Bobby V when he was portrayed the owner of War, but he was the other guy. He was our editor, and he's the one that he was scanning into all the computer and put into word balloons and all that. But he drew a picture of the three of us, the guy getting bailed out of jail, and then the three people that are still left in the cell was us.
Well, this has been, I mean, we could go on and on and on, but we're going to have to bring this show to a close. And Corey, this has been absolutely fascinating conversation. We're definitely going to have you back on
anytime.
In the meantime, you know, if you have any technological problems, reach out to me. I'm a techno geek, so I can try to help you out with whatever. Since you're technologically impaired, I'm going to ask you this very simply. How do people find out more about Ripper Blackheart?
The easiest way is get on Facebook. I don't have Twitter, because that's how the government gets you. Don't believe me? Look what's going on Twitter.
I know.
So, yeah, just I have a Ripper Blackheart page on Facebook. As long as you ain't a creepy or psycho fan, you can hit me on my regular Facebook. I got a lot of regular fans on there. Just know, if you're a fan, if you try to message me, I don't know who you are. I'm probably not going to message you back on my home page. If you go to the Ripper page, that's a better chance to get a hold of me. Other than that, that's about it. I don't keep up on that page as much as I should the Ripper page. I'm pretty lazy. So, But if you message me through the Ripper page or my other page, that's probably the best way to get a hold of me. Unless you slip Donnie some money, he probably has some my number or stuff.
Or you know, if they want to cheer you on or Logan, they can come to FGW every Friday night.
Yes, FGW is every Friday night in Hamilton, Ohio. Lima, Ohio, every other month. You can see me with War Wrestling. Sorry, about every other month in Akron for OCW Wrestling. And when I think the Arnold's the next time New Ohio Wrestling's running. And if I can manage not to get lost this year, you'll see me there again. So.
Well, you've been there for the Arnold and the fair, so I think you pretty much got it.
Now I got it. That's the first time, though. It was taking me to Lancaster. I'm like, I know this is not right.
Well, once again, for John Orlando and Donnie Hoover, Corey, Ripper Blackheart, thank you so much. We look forward to talking to you again. I'm Meat Hook Jim. We'll catch you on the next episode.
See you.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets. Facebook.com/WrestleHorror. Instagram @WrestleHorror. Twitter @WrestleHorror. On our YouTube channel, The Wrestle Horror Channel. Also, you can find us at www.WrestleHorror.com.